This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Quick update from Jets morning skate in Toronto. Steve Mason joining the group for a full workout, so would not be surprised to see Mason come off IR, if not in time for tonight's game, then certainly Monday or Tuesday as the Jets continue their road trip. Expect Eric Comrie to be sent back to the Manitoba Moose, but Steve Mason back healthy by the looks of it for the Winnipeg Jets.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program from the Washington Post. She covers the Washington Capitals, Isabel Kershedian. Isabel, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Isabel, Washington Capitals, you know, finishing up the regular season at this point or over the next week, and they have a firm grasp on first place in the Metropolitan Division, atop the division, and have been for really the last number of weeks and even months. Do you think that the Capitals inside that dressing room might feel a little bit disrespected for the fact that they're not really getting any buzz as a potential Stanley Cup contender? Or does that come with the territory, having sort of playoff disappointment after playoff disappointment?
Yeah, I think they love it. I mean, they've spent the past 2 years with like this huge target on their back. You know, they were the team that everyone was kind of, you know, was very trusted, like the team that people were marking up against. Right, like they were the favorites, they were the trendy cup pick, and yeah, I mean, rightfully so. This year, people look at that team on paper. You know, they lost a lot of guys in the off season, 3 defensemen, 2 top 6 forwards, and just the expectations were different. There was some question of, you know, if they could make the playoffs, and you know, this season hasn't gone as smoothly as those past two, but. You know, they're still in the same place, you know, winning the Metropolitan Division. They're not the President's Trophy winner this year, but I think they prefer this. You know, a few players have said that they don't think they handled that pressure of being the favorite, you know, that well, that, you know, it was a veteran group, but maybe it wasn't that healthy for the group. So, like I said, I think they like kind of being overlooked a little bit because it does help them play a little freer potentially.
Isabel, I wanted to ask you about TJ Oshie. Two-part question. TJ Oshie is a player who has been criticized, as you know, this year for his lack of offensive production, but he's really turned up his game over the last 2 or 3 weeks. I guess first part of the question, does it go without saying that the Capitals are going to be needing TJ Oshie to be producing at the similar level that he's been producing as of late? And with that lower body injury that he suffered the other night against the Carolina Hurricanes, is there any concern that that injury is going to be serious heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they're just being, you know, ultra-cautious, as Barry Trotz put it, with the injury. You know, I don't know if he plays tomorrow against Pittsburgh, because really, if there's any question, I don't think they're going to risk it. There's just no reason to at this point in the season and, you know, where they are in the standing. But I don't necessarily think it's all that serious either. You know, he didn't play the last 10 games. There wasn't like an obvious place where he got hurt. There wasn't, you know, some big hit where he goes off and it looks kind of scary. He might have just tweaked something. So not sure on that one. But either way, I think they're going to be careful. And yeah, he has been playing his best hockey of the season lately. I mean, there was a stretch there where he went, I think it was 34 games with one 5-on-5 goal. And there was like two, you know, 20 game droughts. Kind of in the middle, where he just, you know, wasn't scoring at all. And it wasn't for a lack of trying, but, you know, I think after he suffered that concussion earlier in the season, he just had a hard time kind of getting back to being himself. And so, you know, he made some changes, you know, as far as what stick he was using or, you know, kind of what he was doing off the ice working out. And eventually, kind of that hard work, he had been playing well and just wasn't getting rewarded with the goal production. And I think eventually just the floodgates kind of opened for him. And now I think he's got 5 goals, 4 assists in the past 9 games. So, yeah, I think they absolutely need him. It was pretty amazing to me that they had kind of stayed where they were in the standings without his production all season. So with him kind of back to maybe being closer to the version that we saw last season, I just think it helps their lineup so much where, you know, he's able to play with Backstrom and then Ovechkin's able to play with Kuznetsov, and you really have two kind of first lines that you have to contend with, which is, you know, obviously a tricky matchup for a lot of teams in the salary cap era where you don't have that many good defensemen anymore.
You know, Isabel, this week you asked Capitals owner Ted Leonsis if Barry Trotz's future depends on his playoff performance as he's in the last year of his deal. Now, while the Capitals owner declined to comment, what are your thoughts? Is it tied into the playoff performance?
Yeah, I think it obviously has to be. Otherwise, he would have gotten extended by now. I mean, you can't say anything about this season. You can't say a bad thing about Trotz, I don't think. On paper, they were not as good. You know, they had two rookie defensemen in there for most of the season. And, you know, here they are, and they're still in first place in the Metropolitan Division. I think they've overachieved for, you know, kind of some of their, you know, off-season losses and the salary cap constraints they had to deal with. And, you know, for they had injuries at the start of the year with Matt Niskanen and Hurd, and Andrei Burakovsky was out for a while. You had TJ Oshie, you know, like I mentioned, not producing, and they kind of still, you know, stayed afloat and, you know, played pretty well. They had some good stretches where, you know, there were games where it felt like, or stretches rather, where, you know, they'd win one, lose one, win one, lose one. But the season never really went off the rails. So that's a credit to Trotz. I think when, you know, they had a game in Colorado where they got blown out and he pretty well called guys out in the room, and then they responded with, you know, one of their better stretches of the season kind of in late November and then into December. So, yeah, if it didn't depend on playoff performance, I don't know why he wouldn't have gotten an extension with, you know, Brian McClellan kind of a month or so ago.
Isabel,
so
could...
Sorry,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. To me, it just feels like, you know, if they didn't do it then, you know, they're just waiting to see if it can be anything different than a second-round exit, because that would be the fourth straight under him, even though they've made the playoffs all those years.
Isabel Kurdashian, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Isabel covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post.
You better pronounce her last name right, Drew, because Isabel has it on her Twitter page.
That's where I got it from. Am I doing okay?
It's a little rough.
Honesty is the best policy. I appreciate it. Isabel, obviously, this has not been a Braden Holtby-esque season. The numbers that we're used to seeing from Braden Holtby, you know, certainly down, struggling. You know, Philip Grubauer has been getting more and more starts. As the playoffs approach, you know, is it going to be Holtby? Does he get the first right of refusal in the Capitals' goal? Or do you think that they go with the hotter of the two hands and go with Philip Grubauer when the playoffs begin?
Yeah, I don't think they figured that one out yet. I don't even know who's starting tomorrow in Pittsburgh. And I feel like all along we felt like that game might be the clearest indication of who Trotz sort of sees as the number one before the playoffs, just because it's, you know, a big game. But, you know, I'm not sure because Philip Grubauer has been playing better of late. You kind of have the history with Holtby, and his play has improved since he took that kind of week off to work on his game. You know, before last night, I think he had won his past three starts. So he's getting better. It's hard to kind of deny how well Grubauer has been playing since really late November. So I think they're going to go with, you know, the guy who's playing better in the moment. You know, if Grubauer gets the start tomorrow, then I think that's kind of going to be the big test. You know, you have 3 years of Braden Holtby against Pittsburgh kind of knowing how he does in those situations. And so I'm curious to see if they just go with Grubauer in that game. I have curiosity just to see what happens, see how he handles playing against a team like that. And, you know, maybe he plays himself into it. Maybe he plays himself out of it. But it is I don't think they figured it out yet. I think they are going to keep rotating them right until the end to kind of decide who they should go with.
Isabel, Michael Kempney finally scored his first goal as a member of the Washington Capitals. And for a team that was relatively quiet prior to the NHL trade deadline, has he been a pleasant surprise for them?
Yeah, I think he's been a fantastic addition. To me, like, their blue line looks night and day different with him in there. It's kind of like an under-the-radar add. You know, it's just role and everything, it sort of worked out. They really just needed kind of a stable guy there next to John Carlson. And that slots, you know, Brooke Sorpik onto a third pairing. It puts Christian Juice, a rookie, in the third pairing role. And I think that's better than kind of what it was beforehand, where, you know, you had some guys kind of playing in minutes and, you know, roles that they weren't ready for. So, you know, he adds some mobility there too, because he's a really good skater and kind of helps Carlson, I think, in that way. And, you know, their defense was probably the biggest issue all season. And since he's been in, it's been a lot better, even with kind of some questionable goaltending at times.
You know, Isabel, on Wednesday against the Rangers, Evgeny Kuznetsov tried a lacrosse-style shot in the game. What was the reaction from his teammates? Because, I mean, he obviously didn't score, but it came pretty close.
Yeah, it was Monday night. They played Monday those two Ranger games, and it was awesome. I mean, I loved it, but, I think teammates are just kind of used to that thing from him from now that, he's a guy who has the, the gumption to try something like that in a game, you know, the courage to do something like that. And he's also just kind of the most creative player on the team with kind of what he's able to do and how he sees things and his vision on the ice. I think Oshie said it best that when he's feeling it, he can pretty much do whatever he wants with the puck. And he's obviously feeling it right now. I think he's just scored his 25th goal, and that's a career high. And, you know, this has been the best season of his career, just numbers-wise.
Isabel, last question for you. We appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. John Carlson leads all NHL defensemen with 65 points. Sort of a two-part question. One, and you know, good timing for him as he's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. One, can the Capitals afford to sign him? And two, given the Capitals' lack of depth on the back end, can they afford not to sign him?
Yeah, I think they're going to find a way to afford to sign him because they can't afford not to sign him. you know, it would just be too hard to replace him. You'd end up spending that same money trying to find another guy who eats up that much minutes and plays kind of the roles and the situations that he does. So, yeah, I think they're going to have enough room with, you know, the cap expected to go up. And I think they have, you know, a couple guys coming off the books and whatnot. But, you know, even if they've shown that they're not afraid to kind of make a few trades or moves to clear the cap space necessary if they really want to bring someone back. And I think they do want to bring him back. I mean, last year they traded away Marcus Johansson and made it work for TJ Oshie and signed him to an 8-year deal. I think Carlson is going to want to stay. His wife is from BC. He's lived there his entire life, or his entire career, rather. He spends his off seasons there. His family's from, you know, Jersey, which isn't all that far. So I think, you know, they're gonna find a way to make it work. But yeah, it's certainly gonna be expensive.
Isabel Kershadian covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. Isabel, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, is it the end of the term healthy scratch in the NHL? We'll explain more up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN 1290.ca.
Time is always in flux on a Barry Trotz team. Tonight, it'll be Wilson in, Chimera out.
All right, you ready to get back in? Okay. Okay. You're going good, okay? I don't know if I'll have you on the top line. I might have you on the fourth line. Okay, so just be ready. Hey, Chimmer, I know you're not happy. yeah. What we did is we really had to take someone out. Wanted to put Willie in for the toughness and wanted to put get someone on the second line. So it was a tough decision. It wasn't anything to do with the faceoff. So Okay, just need a little more production. Just put a little work in. We'll get you right back in.
Courtesy of HBO's 24/7 series, that was Barry Trotz telling Tom Wilson he's going to be in the lineup and telling Jason Schmera that he's going to be a healthy scratch. A very interesting article this week, a very interesting idea, posed by Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman in conjunction with Blackhawks team president John McDonough, that the healthy scratch might go by the wayside in the NHL. Basically, John McDonough, as Stan Bowman relays in the article, has been asking him for a number of years, why do we have these three, sometimes more, sometimes fewer players each game that we have to declare ineligible? For the Jets, often this year, it's been Sean Mathias, Marco Dano, Nick Patan, you know the names of the guys who've been healthy scratches. And Stan Bowman has, you know, not necessarily officially proposed the idea, but floated the idea that the healthy scratches could in fact be made eligible to enter a game midway through the game and another player off the 18-man roster be removed from the game, similar to a defensive change in baseball or a change in soccer where a player comes in replacing another player who is no longer eligible to play in that game. For example, let's say you have a defensive specialist who's a healthy scratch for your team. And your team is nursing a...
He's like a Matt Hendricks.
Matt Hendricks, you know, who's more inclined to play on the defensive side than the offensive side. And your team is nursing a one-goal lead with 5 minutes to go in the game. And you have a guy who's a more one-dimensional offensive force. You, based on this rule, would theoretically be allowed to replace the Matt Hendricks with... or replace the offensive player with a defensive specialist like Matt Hendricks, depending on the flow, depending on the tenor of the game. Your thoughts on this idea? It's a new one. I can see both sides to it, but it sort of sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, Drew, I you know, saw this yesterday, and when I first read this, you know, this new proposal or this new idea here with the healthy scratches, I actually thought it was a pretty good idea. And, you know, I think there is some merit to it. The first problem that I have, and I can see coaches having, is if, for example, you want to bring Matt Hendricks into the third period, the Jets are up 2-0 in the third period, and let's say maybe you want to take Jack Roslovic out of the game. And again, I'm just using you know, random players, because Jack
Roslovic, guy for an offense,
right?
Guy,
and Jack Roslovic would most likely be a fourth line player this year on the Jets. The problem is Matt Hendricks is coming into the game with no game action.
Sure.
He's coming in rusty.
He's coming in having not played the first 40 minutes.
Right.
You know, and that's certainly a factor.
So if you're a coach, I mean, do you want to take a player who's been in the game and has been in the flow of a game out for a guy who, and where's the guy? Is the guy sitting in the dressing room? Because he's not sitting on the bench.
No, he's probably in the dressing room, probably riding a bike to make sure that he's got his
blood. But you know what I mean? Like, do you want a player coming in, and Matt Hendricks is an example, but any player on any team, I mean, do you want a player, a specialist, if you want to call it that, coming into a game cold?
Probably not.
Would be my biggest issue with the game, let alone the fact that, you know, rosters have been set like this for ever.
Millennia.
Right? So I like the idea, though, because if you think about it, I mean, it gets players into the lineup that most likely wouldn't have otherwise got into the lineup. You think of, you know, Frank Vetrano with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm. Josh Levo, another
current
example.
Or Jack Roslovic, who's been a healthy scratch as of late. You can maybe get him into the game in the third period when otherwise he would have never got into that game, right? So I think there is some merit to it. Stan Bowman is a very intelligent hockey mind. And I think oftentimes at these GM meetings, you hear ideas that are pretty ridiculous, like you can't ice the puck on the penalty kill. Well, for me, that's stupid. That's just my own opinion.
Right.
But an idea like this, I think, has some merit. So, you know, maybe we'll see this happen one day. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but it does make sense.
Dave, your thoughts on the idea, you know, being able to replace a player midway through the game with another player who previously had been a scratch in that contest?
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
No, I like
you're a traditionalist.
Well, I just think, like, the whole point is you have to construct a roster that you think is going to win the game, and then to have guys that you can pull in out of nowhere, I don't know. I just think it's too baseball-y. I mean, like I said, you've got the roster that you know you're going to come in with, whether it's, you know, 12 forwards and 6 defensemen or 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, however you've constructed it, and I think you have to plan for that ahead of time. And I also think, like, maybe offsetting or minimizing the importance of coming in off in the third period of a game. I mean, you know, that to me is also the biggest wild card. I just don't understand how a guy who's sitting around, I mean, regardless of whether you're riding a bike to keep your legs warm, you haven't been playing a game. So for you, I mean, if a guy only plays, you know, 2, 3, 4 minutes in a period, it's a lot better than just sitting around waiting to get into a game. I just think it's too inconsistent for the flow. So, I mean, me personally, I don't love it from a traditional hockey perspective. But, I mean, again, I don't mind the idea. I don't like I like the idea of broaching new topics. But personally, from my own perspective, I'm not a big fan.
What about if it's only used, for example, for an injury replacement? We've seen so many instances where team goes down to five.
See, I don't think you can start doing that. I think if you're going to allow healthy scratches to play, you have to let them play.
Wash.
Right. I don't think you can do it just for injuries. Because then if you're the Jets playing, let's use the Blackhawks for an example, and, you know, Patrick Kane goes out of the lineup and they're able to put in another player, then the Jets wouldn't be allowed to put in a player because they don't have any injuries. So they have the advantage there. It's unfair. So I think if you're going to allow healthy scratches to be in the lineup, I think it has to be whether the player's healthy or not healthy. You want to substitute a guy who maybe isn't having a good game. And I think it would give coaches a lot of flexibility. And I can see why coaches might actually, you know, entertain this idea and like it. But I think, again, I'm not saying that. I mean, Dave has a valid point. And Dave, you know I'm as old school as anybody. I hated when they brought in the puck over the glass penalty, and I hate the shootout. And like all of the. I think the game is fine, and people start talking about, you know, bringing all these different rules. But
you actually came to the show today in a horse and buggy. You're so old school.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But I understand. You know, it just strikes me as an interesting idea in that you have those players. You mentioned, you know, guys like Josh Levo who can't crack a lineup because just the numbers are always against them, and those guys end up losing a significant portion of their career. Frank Vetrano, who was along in Toronto, was such an issue. You know, free Nick Petan. It's a hashtag we've seen, you know, throughout the different eras of the Winnipeg Jets or the different years of the Jets. Now, you know, maybe a guy like Nick Petan, if a team gets a crucial 5-minute power play and he's more of a power play specialist, can come in and play on that power play. I mean, I can see the pros and cons of it. I think it's probably a little too radical for the NHL, which is so rooted in they don't really do things that are necessarily radical frequently, but I can see some merit to the argument, certainly. Jacob Trouba, speaking of players coming in from injured situations, Jacob Trouba going to return to the Winnipeg Jets lineup tonight. That news just coming down the wire that Trouba will return to the Jets lineup tonight in Toronto as the Jets and the Maple Leafs will do battle, a battle for the bragging rights of Canada. Not much on the line in terms of actual playoff positioning, an opportunity for the Jets to more or less clinch second spot. But it's going to be Jacob Trouba in the Jets lineup tonight. Looks like Tucker Poolman's coming out, and the goaltending matchup, Connor Hellebuck against Curtis McElhaney.
Drew, just wanted to make a correction there. Frankie Corrado is the guy we were talking about. Frank Vetrano was in the Boston Bruins organization. I think he still is, but it was actually Frankie Corrado who couldn't get in the Leafs lineup. So same first name, completely different last name.
We got our Franks mixed up. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Frozen Four. The NCAA Hockey Championships gets underway next week. It's going to feature a Winnipeg Jets product by the name of Dylan Sandberg. Matt Wellens of the Duluth News Tribune covers the University of Minnesota Duluth. He joins us next to talk about Dylan Sandberg and talk about the Frozen Four. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, our Instagram account with some great photography from both the Jets and Moose games. That's available at Instagram.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Frozen Four starts next weekend in St. Paul, Minnesota. From the Duluth News Tribune, he covers the University of Minnesota Duluth. We're pleased to welcome Matt Wellens to the program. Matt, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Matt. Obviously, as I mentioned, I brought you on to talk about the University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs, to talk about the Frozen Four. The Bulldogs draw Ohio State in the first of the national semifinals next Thursday, a rematch of their contest last year. You know, how does the University of Minnesota Duluth match up against Ohio State? And then maybe a quick preview as well of the second semifinal between Notre Dame and Michigan.
Yeah, as you guys mentioned, this is a rematch last year of a regional final, a regional semifinal, actually. It was a tight game, an overtime game, 3-2 that the Bulldogs won. It was a game that really the Buckeyes probably should have won last year. They should have pulled the upset of Minnesota Duluth, but the Bulldogs got some excellent goaltending from Hunter Miska, who's now in the Arizona Coyotes system. In the AHL, he signed after just 1 year with the Bulldogs. UMD, this is an entirely different UMD team, pretty much from that team last year that went to the Frozen Four and played Denver for the national championship. 11 newcomers, 10 of those are freshmen, and 5 of those freshmen are on the back end, and they all played this year. Almost the entire second half, UMD played with 5 rookies back there on their blue line. Dylan Sandberg, the Winnipeg Jets draft pick, one of those guys. 3 of those 5 freshmen were in the World Juniors. Dylan Sandberg, Scott Perenovich, and Mikey Anderson. Mikey Anderson, the LA Kings draft pick. Scott Perenovich, he's a kid that you'll see go in the draft this year. They're all part of that Team USA World Junior squad that won bronze. So it is a rematch of last year's playoff game, but two entirely, I should say at least one entirely different team. The Buckeyes do return a lot. That was kind of their feeling out process. That was the first time a lot of that program had been back in the NCAA tournament for a while. This is the Buckeyes' first Frozen Four appearance in 20 years. I believe the second all-time for the program. It's an interesting matchup, though, between the Bulldogs and Buckeyes, because Steve Rolick, the head coach at Ohio State, he's a former assistant, worked 10 years at UMD under their coach, Scott Sandlin. Steve Rolick is the guy who recruited a lot of that national championship team in 2011 for Minnesota Duluth. Brett Larson, the assistant at UMD, he was a former assistant under Steve Rolick. He had left UMD, went to the junior level, then went to Ohio State and worked with Steve there. So many ties between these programs. It really does make for an interesting national semifinal. And then on the other end, it's Notre Dame and Michigan. Michigan with a first-year coach in Mel Pearson, longtime assistant that took over for Red Berenson. Mel had been over at Michigan Tech for 5-6 years, did really well with that program, brought it back to prominence. And then Notre Dame, like UMD, they were at the Frozen Four last year, and Jeff Jackson, really one of the greats in all of college coaching. Won a pair of national championships with Lake Superior State in the 90s, and now has done really well at Notre Dame, and really kind of brought that program from maybe a second-tier college hockey program that maybe wasn't fully invested in the sport to definitely one of the premier programs now in the country, in the U.S. Jeff's really done a tremendous job there with Notre Dame, and they just always seem like they're on the verge of hitting the pinnacle there and winning a national championship.
You know, Matt, you mentioned last year's Frozen Four, the University of Minnesota Duluth semifinal loss to Denver last year. How much is this team using that as a motivation for this year's Frozen Four?
Yeah, I think a lot of the returners are still stinging from that national championship loss to Denver. They played pretty hard. They really had one bad period in that game against the Pioneers, and Jared Lucas Savage puts up a hat trick in the second there, and it just kind of puts the team, you know, behind the rest of the way. Denver was and still was this year just a great defensive team. They have a ton of offensive weapons, you know, a lot of them now in the NHL after signing after the Buckeyes upset them. But they played such a great puck possession game. They played so well defensively, shut things down, that when Denver got a lead, it's tough to come back, and UMD nearly did, and they had some golden chances there at the end of the game, and I think that stung that squad. So you got the Carson Kuhlmans, Jared Thomas, Blake Young, even the juniors of Parker McKay. A lot of those guys have, I don't know if they really believe that this was possible, that with all the turnover they could get back to this point, but now that they're here, I think they're really hungry to get another shot at a national title.
You know, Matt, being a Winnipeg-based show, everybody here will be clamoring to hear about Dylan Sandberg and how he's developed this season. And so how would you assess his year so far?
Yeah, and Dylan's a local boy here in the Duluth area. Just grew up just outside of Duluth in Hermantown. Grew up watching the Bulldogs. So he's a popular kid here. And sometimes I feel like, you know, he was a great player here in high school, guys. Just a phenomenal defenseman. And he's kind of a local legend because last year he scored the game-winning goal at XL Energy Center for his high school team in overtime, celebrated with a snow angel on that XL Energy Center ice in St. Paul. So he knows the big stage. He's played in big games in St. Paul before. This year, you could tell a little bit in the first half that this was a kid that was, you know, making a pretty big jump. He played minimal junior hockey experience just kind of the end of last year with the Waterloo Blackhawks, the USHL. What was a positive was he got to play next to his future defensive partner, Mikey Anderson, there in Waterloo at the end of the season. But UMD felt comfortable calling him up basically right out of high school because he did play so well in those last few weeks, about a month there with Waterloo in the USHL. So, but there were times you could see at times where, man, this kid's a man. He really, you know, he can use that size and strength to his advantage, but he was still getting accustomed to the college game. And where I feel his season has really turned and his development really turned was going to the World Juniors. You know, a little unsure what the first half he had at UMD, whether he was going to get that invite to go to the World Juniors, but Bob Motzko brought him on to Team USA, and he was a great asset. And him and I talked about that earlier this week, how much confidence he gained from playing for Team USA in the World Juniors. And I think that's carried over a lot to the second half here. And he's been phenomenal. Last weekend in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in that regional, the wins over Minnesota State and Air Force, those were probably his best games of the season. The entire team, I think, defensively, especially that freshman group, it was their best weekend of the season. But definitely Dylan and Mikey, those two were phenomenal. Offensively, maybe they haven't, you know, stepped up, but I don't know if they've had to. Defensively, though, those two have been real strong, and that's what's been great to see.
Matt, is the expectation that Dylan Sandberg is going to play at least one more year for the University of Minnesota Duluth? Could he play two more years, or is there a chance that he signs a pro contract and plays with the Jets or the Moose next year?
Yeah, I would say he's definitely back next year. While he's made some great strides in the second half, with UMD, there's still a lot of development to go. And again, he's a young kid, young kid. I believe he just turned 19 now. So, you know, he's got some development to go. He's probably a year ahead of schedule. If UMD gets back, Neil Pionk, another Hermantown kid, Pionk signed after, two seasons to go with the New York Rangers, and he's been blowing it up for the Rangers here, the last few weeks since he finally got a call up. I think if Neil Pionk comes back, they maybe keep Dylan, you know, they let him go play a year of juniors with Waterloo in the USHL, and he gets that full season in. But instead, they brought him up a year early. And for Jets fans who do want to see Dylan sooner rather than later, that's probably a good thing. I think he's at least at UMD one more year, if not two. It's tough to project. I mean, if he comes out and plays, if he continues the growth that we saw in the second half here, guys, you know, he's probably at UMD one more year, and then the Jets come calling. So,
Matt Wellens is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking with Matt about the upcoming NCAA Frozen Four, which starts Thursday, and Jets prospect Dylan Samberg, who's a member of the Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs, who are playing in that Frozen Four. Matt, you talk about the growth of Dylan Samberg throughout the season. What particular aspect jumped out to you more than any other? You know, was it on the offensive side? Was it on the defensive side that you saw him taking the advancements that you were speaking about?
Yeah, I think where I've seen him grow the most is defensively. I think we've always seen he's got the shot. He can score. We saw a lot of that in high school. And for a guy like Dylan, and the team that he played on in high school, guys, was just a dominating team. They were really good. So at times, I'm not sure how much defending Dylan really had to do there. He was more of an offensive weapon. At UMD, he's had to, you know, be a defensive defenseman, especially since that top pair that UMD has with Scott Perenovich and Nick Wolf, they were more the offensive duo here at UMD this season. You know, where I really like Dylan, where I sit there and, you know, you feel really confident is when him and Mikey Anderson, when they're facing odd man rushes. You know, I've seen Dylan and Mikey both face it, you know, two-on-one, they're the last line of defense, and it's an instinct, you know. It's just they know how to play them, and they've broken up some big ones this year and really helped their goaltender out in the second half. First half, it was the goaltender, Hunter Shepard, saving them a lot and even maybe into January. But the last month, those guys haven't given Shepard a lot of challenges. They haven't given him a whole ton of work. So I think definitely on the defensive end is where we've seen Dylan grow the most here in Duluth. And you know, if I were the Jets, I wouldn't want to rush the kid either. He's growing well right here, and you know, we've seen guys maybe stay a year in college longer than most expected, and that's allowed them at times to go right into the NHL. You know, I look at an Alex Iafallo who did that last year with Duluth, and he hopped right onto the LA Kings top line. We're seeing a lot of college guys this year that's paid off. You play against the big, you know, Dylan's at an age disadvantage here. A lot of the guys college level, they're 22, 23, 24 years old. He's a 19-year-old kid going up against them, and it's been a good experience.
You know, Matt, earlier this week, the three finalists for the Hobey Baker Award were announced. Adam Gaudette of the Vancouver Canucks, Henrik Borgstrom of the Florida Panthers, of course, played for the NCAA champion Denver Pioneers last year, and Ryan Donato, who scored a big goal against the Winnipeg Jets. So all three players have made their NHL debuts in the last couple of weeks. Out of those three players, who do you think the favorite is to win the Hobey Baker Award, maybe one of the best Hobey Baker Award races in a long time?
Yeah, what's fun about this, Hobey, is I don't know if there is a clear-cut winner. I feel like in the past we've gone into this and it's like, okay, you know who's going to win it. You know, that was definitely like when Jack Eichel won the award. Hands down, the race was over for months. I really like Ryan Donato, guys, and maybe I'm clouded a little bit because of what he did at the Olympics for Team USA. You know, that was a great example where maybe the U.S. should have taken more of its young college guys instead of going with the older veterans from Europe, because those college guys played really well. And Ryan Donato is one of them. I really like what I've seen out of Ryan this year. He's been a phenomenal player, and it was a tough year at Harvard. That was a team that I thought very well could have been back. At the beginning of the year, I thought we'd see them possibly back in the Frozen Four with Notre Dame, and they just struggled. Henrik Borgstrom, I don't know if he's had the season that everyone thought, but, man, he is a special talent. That's a kid I was shocked to see come back to college last year, because I think he's a kid that, after his freshman year at Denver, could have went right, you know, into the NHL and been an impact player. And had Jim Montgomery as coach at Denver, I think if he had taken that job in Florida as their head coach, Borgstrom probably follows. But if I had to give, you know, if I had to pick in this race, it'd be Ryan Donato. He's had a phenomenal season.
Matt Wellens covers the University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs for the Duluth News Tribune. The NCAA Frozen Four starts Thursday in St. Paul, Minnesota. Matt, appreciate your time. Thanks for your insight into Jets prospect Dylan Samberg. Enjoy yourself covering the Frozen Four.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Matt. When we come back, we're going to talk about Maple Leafs winger James Van Riemsdyk. He's up to 36 goals. What's his next contract going to look like? It's going to have a lot of dollar figures involved, that's for sure. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Of the three-game season series, there's a Hainsey shot. Does it get through? Van Riemsdyk scores! Well, the red-hot James Van Riemsdyk has his 36th, and the Leafs have their first lead of the night.
That's from last night on Long Island. The Maple Leafs defeating the New York Islanders. James Van Riemsdyk getting his 36th goal on the season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com. A quick note from Jets practice, Jets morning skate in Toronto. Paul Maurice speaking with the assembled media. He confirms that Jacob Trouba will return to the Jets lineup tonight and that he will be paired with Josh Morrissey. Again, that pairing did so well for the Jets earlier in the year prior to the injury bug striking. Obviously, Paul Maurice looking to get that duo back together and get going as we approach the end of the regular season and the start of the playoffs. So Jacob Trouba back in the Jets lineup tonight. Josh Morrissey going to be his D partner as the Jets and the Leafs will do battle later on tonight from Toronto. Speaking of Toronto, James Van Riemsdyk is the topic on this segment of the program. 36 goals on the season in 77 games played for the Toronto Maple Leafs winger. Unrestricted at free agent at season's end, so he's certainly having a career year offensively at the right time. He's going to get paid big money. What could you foresee James Van Riemsdyk getting on the open market? And is his one-dimensional aspect to his game maybe going to cost him a little bit of cash? Or do you think that the 36 goals will speak for themselves?
Drew, I think JVR's next contract has to start with a six, and maybe he gets as high as $7 million a year. And, you know, he's probably the best bargain in the league, or certainly one of the best bargains in the league, making $4.25 million a year. So what's that, $1 million for every 9 goals that he has right now? I mean, really incredible what he's doing, and kind of reminds you of what Blake Wheeler is doing in Winnipeg. And obviously, you know, Blake Wheeler has you know, a few more assists. He's probably got 50 more assists than JVR. But
in terms of outplaying his contract.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, JVR has been a great player in the NHL for quite some time. He's got 5 20 goal seasons under his belt. But, I mean, this year, I mean, his offense has been a big key to the Leafs' success. And obviously, you know, the Leafs are led by Austin Matthews and William Nylander and Mitch Marner, the young guns. But what Nazem Kadri and Patrick Marleau and JVR have done can't be understated. I mean, the veteran goal-scoring depth that this team has is a big reason why where they are in the standings right now. So when you look at, you know, JVR, and you got to think that he's probably going to want a 4 or 5 year contract, I would imagine. I don't know if, you know, teams are going to want to sign him to a 6 or 7 year deal at his age. He's 28 years old, Drew. So I'd probably, you know, say he's probably going to get a 4 or 5 year deal, averaging around $6 to $7 million a year when you look at comparable players. I mean, this is a guy that can easily score 30 goals for you. I mean, it's going to be tough for him to duplicate his career season this year, but this is a guy that, I mean, you can pencil him in, I think, for a minimum of 25 to 30 goals for the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, he's got great hands. You know, he's got the size, and sure, he might be a little bit one-dimensional. He's definitely not as good of a playmaker, you know, as some of the other top players in the league, but, I mean, guys that can score 25, 30 goals year after year, I mean, they don't grow on trees. So I think there's going to be a lot of players that are after him. And, you know, we were talking about it during the break. I mean, he's from the New Jersey area. You wonder if, you know, a team like the New York Islanders would be interested in him. I think a team like the Chicago Blackhawks, I think, would be...
Could go back to his first NHL team, the Philadelphia Flyers.
That's, well, absolutely,
a team that's always looking
and
for
there
offense.
Are cap issues, right? I mean, sure. The Chicago Blackhawks are a team that they're going to have to move some contracts out. I mentioned on the Wednesday show, I mean, I think they would look at moving a guy like Artem Anisimov, and I think they would look at moving a few players, and you're going to get some, you know, contracts coming off of the books. But I think you could probably name, you know, 6 to 10 teams that would be interested in James Van Riemsdyk. And the thing with JVR is you don't necessarily have to put him in a top six role, right? I mean, he can play on your third line. And with teams that have, you know, already established players, you know, in their top six, I think that's probably the best fit. And then the question becomes, well, do you want to pay a guy, you know, $6 million to be on your third line? Well, the answer for me would be yes, you would. So he's going to get paid, that's for sure, July 1st.
Dave, what's most interesting about James Van Riemsdyk and his numbers from my perspective is you look at his goals, which is 36 atop the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, one of the better goal scorers in the entire NHL. And then you look at his time on ice per game played. And that's actually 10th among Toronto Maple Leafs forwards. He's under 15 minutes a game. He's at 14.52. This is a guy, James Van Riemsdyk, who is scoring with not a ton of time on ice, so he's making the most of his opportunities. His shooting percentage is higher than average, 15.4%. So you might expect to see that dip a little bit, but it's not unbelievably high that he's going to all of a sudden bottom out to be a 10-goal scorer as opposed to a 25- or 30-goal scorer.
No, I mean, you look at his history. I mean, he has a 29-goal season, a 30-goal season, a 27-goal season. This is a guy who knows how to put the puck in the back of the net. And sure, he doesn't have as many assists as he's, you know, as he has traditionally in the past. But as Izzy's touched on, I mean, this is a guy who knows how to get it done. And there's going to be a multitude of teams. The guy apparently was a Ranger fan growing up in the New Jersey area. So, I mean, you know, there's a team, I suspect, ironically, probably would be a better fit for New Jersey because they're a team more on the upswing than a team like the Rangers who are in that rebuild. And then, you know, you also got to factor in teams like, you know, the Las Vegas Golden Knights. They could be looking for a player, you know, and they've got some room, right? So there's a team that could potentially spend some money to get a kind of a name player and add that, him to the ranks. So I really think he's going to have his list of teams that he's going to want to play for. And sure, you know, he's making the most of his time, but sometimes there's an advantage, right? Like if you're not playing that much, you're a little fresher and you're getting in enough game space and time, sorry, that, you know, really you're not out of condition. So you're not playing only like 7 or 8 minutes. You're playing enough time that you're not being overworked and you're making the most of it.
And Dave, I think it's unfortunate for the Leafs that they're not going to be able to re-sign him, because when you consider that Austin Matthews, William Nylander, Mitch Marner, all of these players are going to be coming off of their entry-level deals pretty soon, there just isn't enough money to pay James Van Riemsdyk. I don't think you can pay him, you know, let's say $6 million a year on a 4 or 5 year deal when you have all of these young players coming off of their entry level deals. And we talked to Michael Trakos about it. There's still a chance that they re-sign Tyler Bozak when his contract expires, right? Plus you've got Nazem Kadri signed long term. So I just don't think there's enough money to go around in the salary cap age to sign JVR. That's why we're talking about him being a pending UFA. I think there was the possibility maybe that the Leafs signed him last summer, but I think they are projecting the roster going ahead and they see all of these players that they're going to have to re-sign. And it's going to be tough to replace that offense, Drew. I mean, Kasperi Kapanen is a great young player, but the Leafs don't have any other players that they can say, okay, yeah, he can give us 25 or 30 goals next year. With JVR, you know he's going to give you that year in, year out.
Well, you know, you look at what Andrew Ladd got on his contract when he signed with the New York Islanders, and, you know, they're not the exact same player, certainly, but Ladd got 7 years and $5.5 million from the New York Islanders.
I think JVR will get more than that.
I think he has to, just because he scores goals, and that's, at, you know, that's a premium in the NHL.
Yep.
You know, you don't have guys very often hit unrestricted free agency who are still under 30.
Yep.
So he's not like he's got, you know, way too much tread, or, you know, he's got way too much miles on his body. He doesn't play an especially physical game.
He has not missed a lot of hockey in his career. If you look at last year, he played all 82 games for the Leafs. This year, he's played all 77 games for the Leafs. So
I'll tell you what.
And for the record, that Ladd contract could be a cautionary tale.
Well, of course, that Ladd contract's a bad contract, but Ladd certainly plays a more physical style than Van Riemsdyk does.
He's also older.
Yeah, he's a little bit older, but he wasn't when he signed the contract. He was similar in age. I think he was 30 when he signed the deal. Maybe 31, and Van Riemsdyk going to be 29 when he hits unrestricted free agency.
No, but you're right, Drew. I mean, James Van Riemsdyk, he's not a grinder. No. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. I mean, Andrew Ladd's the type of guy that he plays that physical game, as you said. JVR is a sniper.
Yeah.
And he does it really well, right? I mean, he has a good chance to hit 40 goals this year. I mean, he's top 10 in the NHL in goal scoring right now.
You put him on a team who's got a playmaker as a centerman, and you put on, I mean, I don't think that he'd go to Edmonton, but wouldn't he look like a guy who could really fit in next to a Connor McDavid?
He would, pure sniper? Yep.
I mean, that's what a lot of players, a lot of, you know, playmaking centers are looking for, is a guy who doesn't need the puck on his stick, a guy who can just, is a smart player who can get to the soft areas and be able to unleash, you know, the best attribute he has, which is quality goal scoring.
You know, Dave mentioned the New Jersey Devils earlier. Imagine if you have Taylor Hall and James Van Riemsdyk as your top two left wingers. I mean, there are going to be, we talked about it, I mean, there could be as many as 10, maybe more teams that are after JVR.
Well, he's probably the second in terms of forwards. After John Tavares, he's probably the second biggest name available in free agency come July 1st when it comes to forwards. It'll be interesting to see what he gets on the open market, especially in a year where the salary cap is projected to rise, but some reports maybe even $5 million up to $80 million or so next season. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. They're obviously first in the Pacific Division. They're playoff bound. We talk about the Golden Knights next with Jason Pothier of the Sin Bin Vegas podcast. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Sin Bin Vegas podcast, he covers the Golden Knights. We're pleased to welcome to the program Jason Pothier. Jason, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Pleasure to join you guys.
Jason, we're sitting here with about four or five games to go in the regular season for most teams. The Golden Knights are where they have been all season long, atop the Pacific Division. Yet, as we approach the playoffs, you hear, you know, the prognosticators and the pundits list their Stanley Cup favorites, and they list the Bruins, and they list the Lightning, and they list the Penguins, and they list the Predators, and they list the Jets, and you don't often hear them list the Vegas Golden Knights as a true Stanley Cup contender. As we sit here 78 games through the regular season, are the Vegas Golden Knights still not getting the respect they deserve?
Yeah, I agree with you. I do not think they are, and I think it's a little bit of, maybe being naive from the analysts across the league, because early in the season, nobody expected that they would be in this position here now. So I think a lot of people are still going back to their expectations early on and thinking that they probably won't get it done in the playoffs. However, you know, you got to look at the makeup of the team right now. They're really hurt, and, you know, they're banged up just like every other team. But the best part about it for the Golden Knights is they have this little pad or cushion that they're able to extend players their recovery time, like Riley Smith, like James Neal, David Perron, guys that are really meaningful to the team that just haven't been on the ice. So right now it's just, you know, they're not playing well, so I think some experts look at it and say maybe they're backing their way into the playoffs, you know, and really that's not the case.
Jason, William Karlsson is up to 41 goals on the season. He's definitely within striking distance of Alex Ovechkin for the Rocket Richard Trophy. He's a pending UFA, and I would argue probably one of the biggest bargains in the NHL right now at $1 million per year. What do you think his next contract is going to look like?
Well, you know, to be honest, there's no way that he'll slip Las Vegas, because, you know, George McPhee will do anything to make sure he keeps William Karlsson. And he wants to make sure that that line of Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and William Karlsson are together for a long time, at least 3 to 5 years. So I see somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5 years, probably at around $5 to $5.5 million.
You know, Jason, the Golden Knights clinched the playoff spot, and they came up with a rather ingenious plan to keep the opposition fans out of the building called the Knights Vow Program, which gives season ticket holders incentive to keep their seats as opposed to putting them on the secondary market. Do you think that's going to be successful in keeping whichever team they're facing out of the building?
I do, you know, and it is a really good idea, because there's one thing that the Golden Knights have learned this season, or Golden Knights fans have learned this season, is that the opposing team does bring a lot of fans. Winnipeg, when they came down, I mean, there was it was basically 50-50. So there, this is a way that the organization and the fans can make sure that it's more of a 70-30 kind of ratio in the building. But I really do think Golden Knights fans, even if they did buy the second option to sell their tickets in the secondary market, I think a lot of them will end up keeping them because it's just so exciting around here.
Jason Pothier is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason covers the Vegas Golden Knights and has a podcast called the Sin Bin Vegas Podcast. Jason, you look at the Golden Knights defense, and all season long, I think that they've been unheralded for really how well they've played and sort of been, you know, kept this team afloat. They're obviously led more offensively than they are on the back end, but the defense has certainly done the job. As we head into the playoffs and as the games become more meaningful, do you think the Golden Knights have a solid enough defense to make a lengthy run in the Western Conference, or do you think the defense will end up being their Achilles heel come playoff time?
Unfortunately, you nailed it. I think that is the glaring hole heading into the playoffs is what their defense will do. You know, like you said, they've been brilliant all season long. Derek Englund had a career year at 35 years old. Braden McNabb has been great. Nate Schmidt, monster. But, you know, as the season gets a little bit longer, Derek Englund definitely needs less time on the ice. And if Lucas Pisa can come back healthy and take over that number one pairing with Nate Schmidt, it would give less minutes to an older guy like Englund, give a little bit more minutes to a guy like Colin Miller. If they're able to continue what they've been doing all season, and that's shutting down top lines, then they'll be all right. However, it is late. You know, it is late in the season. A lot of games under Derek Englund's belt and Braden McNabb's belt. They just need to make sure that those guys are fresh and doing what they need to do.
Jason, we're a Winnipeg-based hockey show, obviously, so we got to ask you about Cody Eakin, and he had a beautiful sauce to William Karlsson yesterday on his breakaway goal. And Eakin is a guy who had a bit of a down year last year with the Dallas Stars, and he started off a little bit slow. Has he finally, here in the last month to 2 months, solidified himself in his role with the Vegas Golden Knights, do you think?
You know, Eakin's a funny guy because a lot of fans get on him out here because of last year's numbers and because he started on the first line in the beginning of the year. He's now being relegated down to the third line, which I think he's perfect at. I think that's what you need, a guy like Cody Eakin, 14 to 16 minutes, get him on the ice, get some big face-off draws. The only thing with Cody Eakin, he's not going to put up the numbers, especially down on the third line. However, he plays all three zones, and like you said, he had a beautiful pass last night on the shorthanded goal by Karlsson. So it really is what his role is. He's playing a good job at, and I think heading into the playoffs, he'll be exactly who they need for a third-line center in defensive draws and in the neutral zone.
Jason, I was in Vegas earlier this month, and you know there was quite a bit of buzz around the strip just of, you know, people wearing the gear. What's it like right now in the city itself? Are people getting excited for the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, again, it's just been some really a magical city. I mean, season for this city, because really they haven't had anything like this. You know, UNLV has been a decent program, but it really hasn't been a great program in over 30 years. So you're looking at basically that was their only form of sports entertainment for, you know, up until this year. So when this team came out firing at all cylinders like they did, it got the fans really warm for the playoffs and ready to go. And now they're just so amped and pumped. And I think it's going to be a really tough place to come in and play.
Jason Pothier is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason covers the Vegas Golden Knights, has a podcast called the Sin Bin Vegas Podcast. Jason, we know that at the trade deadline, or we heard at the trade deadline, that the Golden Knights went big game hunting, and that big game was Erik Karlsson of the Ottawa Senators. Allegedly, they got close to acquiring him. Do you expect that George McPhee is going to be similarly active this offseason as well? Maybe a guy like John Tavares or another one of the big free agents could end up in Vegas at season's end?
You know, that's normally not George McPhee's MO. He doesn't normally go after the big fish. What I think he's more likely to do is possibly trade James Neal's rights before the draft or during the draft. That way he can get something in return for losing James Neal, essentially. They just won't probably come to terms with James Neal and his agent because, you know, Neal will want his last big contract, and I don't think the Golden Knights will be willing to pay the term in the AAV that Neal will want after 30 years old. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to have to make sure that they sign the Carlson, sign the Colin Millers, and get guys back on the line, get back, you know, guys that they have, you know, slated in for the future. Guys like James Neal, David Perron, those are questions, but I really don't think he'll be in the market for Tavares.
You know, Jason, we've talked about Riley Smith, William Karlsson, James Neal, you know, Jonathan Marchessault, some of the top players for the Vegas Golden Knights. Alex Tuck is a guy that's had a quiet good year for the Vegas Golden Knights. He's up to 15 goals on the season. This is a former first-round pick of the Minnesota Wild. Do you think it's been talked about enough about how good of a year he's having this year for Vegas?
You know, Alex has actually become kind of a fan favorite, and for good reasons. He shows a ton of skill out there. And, you know, the one thing that Alex is sort of developing still is using his size. And the coach, and Coach Gallant says it all the time. He wants Alex to use his size, not necessarily for big hits or to get in the fights, but just to use his size in front of the crease and to make some other, you know, decisions on the ice that uses his body. He's been really good lately over the past probably about 10 games. Ever since Riley Smith got hurt, Tuck joined the line of Carlson and Marchessault, and it's really been connecting. And I think that it's been able to allow him to use his body and his skill more. So he's definitely developed, and Vegas fans really love watching him play.
Well, Jason, as we mentioned, that we're a Winnipeg-based show, so we'll ask about another Winnipegger. How's Ryan Reeves been since his trade to the Golden Knights?
You know, at first it was kind of a tough blend because he came in and he made some noise right away by picking up some penalties, getting into a fight. They ended up losing the first two games against the Kings that he played. So, you know, the fans didn't understand why the move was made. And once they saw the two losses, they were really, you know, they were frustrated. They said, why did George McPhee have to add a player like this to the Golden Knights? Well, over the past week or 2 weeks, Ryan Reeves has been playing very well at his position and in his role, 9 to 10 minutes a night. He's playing Golden Knights hockey. He's pushing the pace, and he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. He does take the hits when he needs to, but he's not going after the big hits and potentially taking the penalty. So I think he's fitting in nicely, and really, I think he's going to be a good fourth liner heading into the playoffs for them.
Jason, we'll let you go on this final question. We appreciate your time this morning. The Golden Knights don't yet know who their first-round opponent's going to be, given that it's one of probably Los Angeles, Anaheim, St. Louis, or Colorado as they do battle for the final Western Conference playoff spots. Do the Golden Knights, from your perspective, have a team that they would like to face more than another, and then conversely a team that they'd be more happy to avoid than play in that first round?
I think, to be honest, they would like to stay away from one of the Pacific teams in the first round. Those Pacific teams know them very well, and they're very ticked off of how the way the season series went. Plus, they're bigger, they're physical, and they know how to push around the Golden Knights. Now, when it comes to St. Louis and Colorado, I think they could be ideal matchups for the Golden Knights. However, those teams are very skilled and fast themselves, so there's a good chance that those series go 6 or 7 games. I do think the Golden Knights will get out of the first round, but it'll be very tough after that.
Jason Pothier covers the Vegas Golden Knights for SinBin.Vegas. He's got a podcast as well called the SinBin Vegas Podcast. Jason, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Jason. When we come back, we discuss Josh Hosang and the New York Islanders, a bit of a war of words between the Islanders, their management, and their young prospect. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Aspect of it. There's not a guy in this organization in the last year and a half I've spent more time with either, so. You know, I was disappointed in that because to say that, you know, my job when he's down there is to watch him and to watch the reviews from Chris Lamoriello, the GM down there, and Brent and the coaches, and talk about maybe, please, and talk about maybe how we can move forward, right? And I watched every single game he played with him in my office till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, every single game, and talked about his off-ice, talked about the on-ice. I have compassion for him. I like him. So that was disappointing, but, you know, I get it. There's frustration, and, you know, I'm glad hopefully he got it off his chest, but we have to move forward, and we have to do that face-to-face, and that's the last I'm going to discuss.
That's New York Islanders head coach Doug Waite talking in response to Josh Hosang and the comments that Hosang made. I'll read them momentarily about his role with the Islanders and the disappointment that he's had this season in not being an active member of the Islanders. He spent most of the year down at Bridgeport in the AHL. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. You may have seen him on Conan O'Brien. You may have seen him on America's Got Talent. Kellen Erskine is at Rumors tonight, his final night in town. Two shows. He's been playing before sold-out crowds all week long. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. Not a ton of seats available, my understanding is, for both the 7:15 and 10 p.m. shows, so you better do it quickly. RumorsComedyClub.com. Here's what Josh Hosang had to say to get Doug Waite so perturbed. "I love those guys. I want to make that clear," Hosang told The Athletic's Arthur Staple about the Islanders players. "I know they're working hard, but I got sent down for defense, and what are they in goals against in the NHL? I only played 22 games up there this year. I don't think it's my fault. They really painted it like it was my fault at the beginning of the year, and I didn't like that. I do have things I need to work on down here. My game is far from perfect. It can constantly improve, but I do think a lot of the stuff was unwarranted, especially in terms of the rope that other people were given. I understand that I have a history and that it might be a factor. I don't know, but it's frustrating to me." That's Josh Hosang about his role with the Islanders.
You know, Drew, people could just subscribe to The Athletic and read the whole article.
They could, but a lot of people don't, in fact, subscribe to The Athletic.
I'm just bugging you.
I know you are. We do recommend that you do. It's a quality website. Josh Hosang was a controversial draft pick when the Islanders took him. He had some off-ice baggage, as the euphemism goes. He got off to a rocky start with the Islanders. If you recall, his first training camp, he overslept, missed the opening practice, was made to run the steps at the old Nassau Coliseum for about 2 or 3 hours.
I'm sure that was fun.
And then was immediately sent back to the OHL. This year, he started the season with the Islanders, didn't play particularly well, and has spent the rest of the year at Bridgeport, including having been a healthy scratch for Bridgeport. He's got 26 points in 42 games. He's got 12 points in 22 games at the NHL level. He's talented. He's a bit of an enigma. He's now speaking out against the organization that drafted him and has worked with him. Is this the beginning of the end of the relationship between Josh Hosang and the New York Islanders organization?
Yeah, it could be, Drew, and Doug Waite said it best. I mean, he said that Josh Hosang is clearly frustrated, and we hear that Josh Hosang is frustrated in this article written by Arthur Staple. And the biggest issue with Josh Hosang's game is his play without the puck. I mean, you mentioned his numbers, Drew. I mean, he was almost a point a game with the Islanders early this season, and he was a good Ontario Hockey League player, but he just still needs to improve his defensive game, and that's why he's not in the NHL right now. And I think that Doug Waite would say the same. And, you know, I think, you know, when he was drafted probably a little bit later than he should have been, but the New York Islanders said that they had confidence in Josh Hosang and they were going to bring him along slowly. And I think what you're seeing is that this Islanders team is clearly not going to the playoffs. It's been pretty evident for over a month now that this team is not going to the playoffs.
Horrible year in Long Island.
Yes, and Josh Hosang wants to be recalled and he wants to be showing what he can do at the NHL level. And the Islanders haven't recalled him, so now he's still in the American Hockey League. And, you know, I think that there's still a chance that they hang on to him, but I think there's also a chance they look at moving him. And you got to think, if you're Garth Snow and the Islanders management, I mean, you don't like that Josh Hosang is speaking publicly about his unhappiness with the Islanders, but hey, it is what it is. And, you know, Josh Hosang, you know, in conversation with Staple, telling him that he's not happy about the way the season has gone with the Islanders organization. So, you know, maybe they decide to move on from Josh Hosang, but I mean, he's certainly not doing anything, you know, positive, you know, for his development right now by speaking out and criticizing, you know, the decision making of the Islanders front office. So, you know, whether or not he stays with the Islanders remains to be seen. I have no idea. I have no insider knowledge, but I mean, he's definitely not doing himself any favors, I'll tell you that much.
Dave, a young player, a guy who, you know, it's not like he's tearing it up at the AHL level. Should he just be focused on himself as opposed to, I mean, we like it, obviously, gives us something to talk about, but it seems like this is a guy who expects to have the world handed to him on a platter and hasn't really done anything as a member of the Islanders organization to deserve it.
Well, I think you call this at the beginning of the end. I think this is the end of the end.
The end of the end.
With Hosang.
His mother was a mother.
Yeah. I just think that you appreciate his honesty and the fact that he's willing to speak his mind, because so often we don't get that from players. So there is that aspect that's refreshing. But unfortunately, in this instance, it's probably not what's best for his development. Because, I mean, unless he just is trying to force the Islanders' hand and essentially say, look, I'm not happy with the organization. He's not saying publicly, trade me. But perhaps this is just his way of essentially saying, I don't want to be an asset for this team. Put me somewhere else where I'm going to be, you know, used in a manner that I see that's more, you know, fitting for what he thinks he brings to a team. Now, of course, that's not necessarily good to whatever that future team is, because you can't really go in there and dictate, especially as a player who still has something to prove, that, you know, you want to have X be, you know, like you said, like something handed to you. So, I look, he's a talented player, but I just think, in this instance, he probably should have just kept it to himself, unless he was trying to force the organization to do something, which, again, we can't get within his head. We don't know what his intent was. But from my perspective, you know, when a young player speaks out, especially, you know, let's be realistic, regardless of the size of the market, but this is New York. It's not exactly a small market. Mm-hmm. Now, they're obviously not the Rangers, but they're still the Islanders, and it's still big enough that that's going to have those comments, even if they're said in Bridgeport, are still going to have reverberations to the parent club and within the league. So I think, as you said, it's something to give us to talk about here in Winnipeg. So, you know, it's something that they're being discussed out in New York.
Dave, I don't think it's ever a good thing when a young player who's trying to make a name for himself in the NHL is criticizing the team that pays his salary, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Josh Hosang. I think he's a very exciting player. He's got oodles of talent.
Offensive talent.
But he's got to round out his game. Mm-hmm. So I think he's got to be patient. He's still a very young player. So we'll see if he sticks with the Islanders organization. But whatever organization he ends up with, the same thing goes. I mean, he's got to wait his turn when there are other players ahead of him.
Yeah, and the Islanders definitely want him to blossom, but he's got to blossom on both sides of the puck. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Jason Pothier. We are joined by Matt Wellens, Isabel Kurdashian, Michael Trakos, and of course, back in hour number one, Dave Jamieson. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes. It's available on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to you each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Producer Rory McGoran doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.